If I go, I swear they'll change my name. I don't think that I will be the same.
School's out.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi, Gigawabamin, Soko Seni Denit E, Ninen Yuji Hina,
Ekose,
Kakuudau. We'll see you again.
Katie, you want some cool new music to listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.
This is Bird Note. When taking public transportation, you might read a book or listen to a podcast. But what if you used your commute to do a little birding? On the way to the bus or train stop, you might see a common grackle hopping along the curb. Or hear a house finch belting it out from a street tree. If the light rail goes over a river or passes by the shore, keep an eye out for gulls, herons, and birds that go diving for fish. And on the ride, you can also take comfort in knowing that you're helping birds by using public transportation and avoiding a potential car trip. By carrying more people in a single vehicle, mass transit can use less energy than cars. Taking steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions can help the hundreds of bird species put at risk by climate change. Not to mention, while driving a car, you can't just relax and tune in to the birds all around you. BirdNote is on a mission to inspire a million people to take action to help birds over the next 3 years. To learn what you can do, visit birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News... The community of Lac aux Lambs, along with Kitkatla, Gitgat Nation, and the Kitisuhehe, announced their opposition to Canada and British Columbia initialing treaties with neighboring nations Kitsamkalem and the Kitsilis last week. Lac aux Lambs Rights and Title Chair Councillor Joey Wesley attended a meeting with provincial and federal Indigenous Relations Ministers, along with Kitkatla, Gitgat Nation, and the Kitisuhehe, to express disappointment and concern over what Wesley called the failed Crown reconciliation efforts with each First Nation. In June, the federal and provincial governments initialed treaties with both Kitsilis and Kitsamkalem for land, resources, and continued funding for community and infrastructure projects. After the initialing of the treaties, Lac aux Lambs Mayor Gary Reese said now that the government has moved forward with the Kitsilis and Kitsamkalem treaties, it will be difficult to discuss reconciliation with Canada and BC as they ignore Lac aux Lambs' interests and infringe on their rights. Today, we'll speak with Lac aux Lambs Mayor Gary Reese about why they oppose these new treaties and how they intend to move forward with reconciliation as their trust in government erodes. Stay with us.
My name's Gary Reese, and I'm the mayor of Lac aux Lambs Band.
Great, Gary. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News again. I wanted to touch base with you today because Lhakwa Lambs, as well as Gitgatla, Gitgat, and the Kitisu Hehe, issued a statement that they're in opposition to the treaty negotiations that have been going on with the Kitsum Kalum and Kitsilas. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you and the other nations felt you needed to put out this statement and oppose the treaty negotiations?
Well, I'm aware of the Nisselhofer Treaty, both Kalum and Kitsilas. And, you know, we do support treaties that are outside of our territory and that they do not break traditional law or encroach on our rights and title. So we're totally against that when they came into our territory. And I'll go back a number of years when the Simpson Tribal Council was formed to negotiate treaties. And I sat in a lot of those meetings there when I was on council then. And they all agreed on the boundaries. There were maps that were put out and was done by their hereditary chiefs and elders of all the communities. And BC, federal government, and the Treaty Commission accepted those maps. And over time now that, you know, they've changed and are claiming into our territory. So we cannot agree with that.
Gary, what can you tell me about the Lhakwa Lambs Reconciliation Framework Agreement? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we've been in negotiations with that there, and on phase one, we are, for the lands part there, we've agreed to phase one lands that were going to be turned back over to us, and it's all agreed to by the province. It went to the cabinet, and everything was approved. That's all in place for that, and we're going to be going into phase two, and then there's an election coming up, so the provincial government said there was nothing that they're going to be able to do because of election that's going to be coming up. And yet they go on and issue those two treaties there when they tell us that. So we're not too happy with that.
Gary, tell me a little bit more about, you know, you've been working with the Government of Canada and BC on this reconciliation agreement. Obviously, there's other, you know, things going on as well, MPAs and all that business. We spoke the other week about this. How does this kind of create conflict or put into, you know, a little bit of jeopardy these issues, these other issues that you have to communicate with these governments for? Have they responded to you after this statement regarding any of this?
Well, they haven't. I haven't seen any response, and they you know, we tried getting meetings with the government over that, and we had one meeting with them, and the allied tribes put out the information about our territory and that they don't agree with the First Nations claiming into our territory. They were well aware of that. You know, they haven't consulted with us yet with what is happening. And that's, you know, the law that they have to consult with us, and that hasn't happened.
Gary, I also know, you know, there's been some other, you know, conflict recently with the signs being cut down along the highway, other signs being set ablaze. You know, this seems to be just falling right into that issue that it seems that there are some disputed territories and boundaries now. However, as you mentioned, there are maps and data and information going back many years that outlined other areas and that everyone agreed upon. What do you think is kind of going on now? Why is this happening now? It seemed like this was dealt with before and it's bringing it back up.
Well, that's why I said that, you know, their boundaries are all drawn during the Simpson Tribal Council days, and, you know, we haven't changed ours. We have exactly the same boundaries that were put out and it was done by the hereditary chiefs and the elders of each community that when that happened, and over time now they changed and claiming into our territory, and You know, and I think it has a lot to do with development. And when the court case Haida Gwaii had there, where they had a consultant accommodate, some of these communities started claiming into our territory because it was all happening in our territory.
One other point you made in the statement was saying that there's been an acknowledgement that the ancestral territory and boundaries are non-linear and fluid. This is coming from one of the ministers. But you dispute that and say, no, that this is incorrect. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think they're well aware of what we what our tribes have, our territory, and it's been put forward a number of times to them, and they just ignore that.
Gary, how would you like to see this move forward and be resolved?
Well, I think the government has to sit down with us and do the consultation with our communities and deal with it, and that has to happen.
Okay, Gary. Mayor Reese, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for your time. We'll definitely stay in touch on this this subject.
Okay, thank you.
That was Gary Reese, Mayor of Lac aux Lambs. Our colleague with the LJI in Terrace, Sabrina Spencer, was at the signing of the treaty on June 25th and spoke with Melissa Quacksister, a communications consultant who worked on the treaty.
The initialing of the Kitsum-Kalem Treaty on June 25th marks a significant milestone in the relationship between Kitsum-Kalem First Nations, the Government of Canada, and the Government of British Columbia. This treaty, influenced by principles from UNDRIP, focuses on preserving Kitsum-Kalem's culture and spiritual practices while advancing their autonomy. CFNR was on location for the initialing and later spoke with Melissa Quacksister, Communications and Community Engagement Consultant.
It's Melissa Quacksister. I'm a member of the Comox First Nation, and I work with Kitsum-Kalem as a Communications and Community Engagement Consultant. Okay, so how will Kitsum-Kalem ensure that the treaty respects and supports the community's cultural traditions, language, and spiritual practices?
Good question. Kitsum-Kalem will support communities' cultural traditions, languages, and spiritual practices through their culture and heritage chapter, which is embedded with the governance chapter. It is also protected in the Kitsum-Kalem Constitution that they will always be able to practice, promote, and preserve their culture, languages, and spiritual practices. And that will happen with the guidance and direction of the Kitsum-Kalem people, hereditary chiefs, and spiritual leaders.
Can you outline Kitsum-Kalem's approach to ensuring fair and equitable representation of all community members in decision-making processes post-treaty?
Absolutely. Kitsum-Kalem will ensure fair and equitable representation of all community members in decision-making processes post-treaty through a forum that we are calling the People's Assembly, the Kitsum-Kalem People's Assembly. So a minimum of once a year, there needs to be an assembly held where the Kitsum-Kalem government needs to present strategic plans, budgets, and any legislative pieces that need to be discussed on the floor. During that time, they will integrate and include feedback on any of these issues from the people, and the way the organization structure will work is instead of having the council or executive or legislature at the top, it's actually Kitsum-Kalem members at the top, and they direct the government of Kitsum-Kalem. So it's not BC and Canada sort of dictating your leadership anymore. It's now the people who dictate. And if the leadership does not follow the guidance and direction of the people, then that will show in the following elections.
All right, so what opportunities does Kitsum-Kalem foresee for youth involvement and leadership development within the new governance structures established by the treaty?
Kitsum-Kalem foresees youth involvement and leadership and development within the new governance structures established by the treaty through a number of ways. We've discussed having elder representation on committees that inform or direct, provide direction or information to the legislature or the administrative executive folks in the government structure. We have also at this time been, or in the past summer and this upcoming summer, looking at having some summer students take part in the work we do inside in communications and other Kits and Kalem work. Other than that, we have, our door is always open to youth. We do utilize social media such as Instagram and Facebook, mostly Instagram, to try and entice young people to take a look. It is very hard to connect with youth today, and we need to find their level of understanding. At the end of the day, all of this is for them.
What are the provisions in the treaty that support Kits and Kalem's aspirations for self-governance and autonomy over local affairs?
Provisions in the treaty that support Kits and Kalem's aspirations for self-government and autonomy, it's spelled out in the governance chapters, several governance chapters that speak to this, as well as there are, I would say what it comes down to is Kits and Kalem under the treaty becomes a third order of government along with BC and Canada. They are more than a municipality, have more powers and more authority. However, that doesn't give Kits and Kalem any authority over local governments, but an equal standing where they can work together for the betterment of all, everybody who lives in the Terrace area and the Kits and Kalem territory.
So how has Kits and Kalem engaged with local municipalities and regional governments to ensure alignment and cooperation on shared priorities post-treaty?
Kits and Kalem has engaged with local municipalities and regional governments over the last several years. We have had representatives from the regions or at the City of Terrace sitting at the treaty table over several years, so they have been sort of a part of it and at a bit of a liaise with the rest of the local government there. And they have been in support, and over the past few years as Kits and Kalem and the local governments have been getting to know each other, the relationship has been growing stronger. In addition, BC and Canada absolutely have a obligation and a duty to consult with their local governments as well, and Kits and Kalem has been participating as part of the team in those consultations with local government to ensure that they are aware of the process and where we're going, and answering any other questions.
And then the last question, what measures are in place within the treaty to enhance healthcare, education, social services for Kits and Kalem members, particularly vulnerable populations?
Excellent question. So the measures that are in place within the treaty to enhance healthcare, education, and social services for Kits and Kalem members, including vulnerable populations, include the negotiations around existing programs and services to continue to start. Over time, as Kits and Kalem builds wealth, they will be able to add in and build programs and services for both folks who live within the territory and outside the territory to try and create equity amongst all the people and a higher quality of life for Kits and Kalem members. To do that, we have ensured that all those programs and services that are in place now will continue and be enhanced in certain areas. In addition to that, modern treaty nations that are already in existence are in a separate set of negotiations to increase the programs and services within their own nations. When those negotiations are completed, we will be able to incorporate them into the Kits and Kalem treaty, where that will increase the amount for programs and services for Kits and Kalem people over the next several years.
Been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CSAK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.
From the end of it all, I look back to the start and watched as we pulled till it all fell apart. We tried and we tried and we tried, but the end of it all came anyway. From the end of it all, I look back to the start and watched as we pulled till it all fell apart. We tried and we tried and we tried.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Forest fires can race through dry vegetation and trees, leaving behind a desolate landscape.
Everything around you is burnt to a crisp, and the forests are really silent. All the animals are gone, all the birds are gone.
Emily Fairfax is a geographer at the University of Minnesota who studies how beavers, yes, beavers, can help reduce the damage caused by wildfires. By building dams and digging channels, beavers create wetlands that support moist vegetation. This water can prevent the land from drying out during a drought and stifle any wildfires that try to burn through.
The beaver wetland comes into view, and it's a completely different situation. It's suddenly very loud. You hear birds calling, you hear amphibians calling, you hear the fish jumping and the water splashing, you hear the beavers grumbling and chatting with one another, and everything's green and everything's lush.
Fairfax says beaver populations have been decimated across much of North America. But some wildlife officials in states like California are now reintroducing beavers to make the land more resilient, especially as climate change raises the risk of extreme fires.
If we can work with natural processes and animals like beavers, we have a lot better shot of actually protecting these landscapes we care about.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Louis Belcour.
The Cortez Island Community Foundation announced their funded projects for the 2024 Microgrants for Neighbors program, which included four different projects working with Clahoose Nation members, including a Helping Elders Heal program, design work being done for a group of Namkwan singers, and a project working on Clahoose regalia and a workshop to go along with. There were 32 applicants and 14 projects funded by the program, and the Cortez Island Foundation used their entire budget of about $6,000, says Isabel McKnight, executive administrator at the Cortez Island Community Foundation. I spoke with her for more.
Tell us a little bit about the microgrants announcement this year. And did you do anything differently this year or any new updates?
So this year we had 32 applications for microgrants for neighbors, which is awesome. It's even more than last year. And we were able to fully fund 14 of those projects, which actually ended up taking our entire budget of over $6,000, which is amazing. We really worked on advertising and spreading the word and making sure we had a really diverse jury that they help make the decisions for the microgrants. We were super lucky to get Georgina from Clahoose, and she really helped take on a leadership role in getting applicants from Clahoose to apply. And so we feel super grateful that we were able to fund four projects for the Clahoose community specifically.
And can you give a few details on some of those notable projects that are going to be supportive of the Clahoose community?
Of course. So we have Anna, who's going to be working on the community garden there. She's a member of the Clahoose community and also a youth there, which is awesome. One of the applications that we received and that we're funding is called Helping Elders Heal. So what they've described the project as is a two-day workshop for Clahoose elders that's focused on orthopedic body work, stretching and exercise. And they're hoping to be able to bring an indigenous practitioner in who could help the elders manage pain and promote wellness. Another program is designed for Namkwan singers. And sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. They're hoping to get vests designed for their drumming group. And they've described it as that this program will support the community effort to take a more powerful role and presence in the community, both at Clahoose and beyond. So that would be an amazing program to see. And another one is an Indigenous regalia workshop. So they would be working on getting materials put together to create traditional regalia and dress for different ceremonies that they use in their community. So not only would they be able to have it for the community, but they would be able to teach members of the community how to make these traditional dresses and regalia.
Just coming off of National Indigenous History Month in June, what does it mean to have such good engagement this year with our local Indigenous peoples?
Yeah, so we're super excited that we have had lots of engagement from the Clahoose peoples throughout this program. One of the really big things that the foundation is trying to work on is just increased accessibility for all different sectors of our community, not only providing a portal to apply online because that's not accessible to everybody, but canvassing, doing door-to-door, advertising where different communities will see it. For example, we have kind of connections in each different sector that we get to help promote whatever we think would be beneficial for them. So putting it in the seniors newsletter, putting it in the Clahoose newsletter, having those different representatives really, really help. But just, yeah, all around increasing accessibility is a really big thing that we want to work on. So we're super stoked to see all these programs come into the community.
Louis Belcour, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.